All right. So, like I said, I want to welcome all the guests. We address one another as brother and sister out of a show of respect and solidarity. During these town hall meetings, we don't discuss religion. We don't discuss the male, female, the black male and female dynamic, because that's an opinion-based situation, and so we would be going around in circles and circles all day. We don't discuss political party affiliation, right? So if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, if you're an independent, whatever it is, we don't discuss politics. The only thing that we do discuss is we discuss politics in, as it pertains to us in the black community and how it affects us and what we can or how we can use it for the betterment of our people. Black Wallace Matter, for anyone that did not get a chance to watch the blueprint before coming on the call, Black Wallace Matter is a movement comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in the black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of our black dollars, the dollars that we already have. It's estimated that we spent $1.4 trillion last year. So we're looking to practice group economics to impact our community. This is a solution-based. These discussions are solution-based. So although we'll put out certain ideas and certain topics, the goal is to come up with viable solutions. But we fully understand that nothing is going to happen unless we're able to put our money where our mouth is. So we all distributed all across the country. So as you know, we had a sister here. She's saying she's from Maryland. We have people on the West Coast. We have people on the East Coast, the South, the North, right? So we're all over the country. And we are coming together to create something of a national movement, a collective movement. We are going to use our black dollars to create more black businesses so that we can provide jobs for more of our brothers and sisters. So let's see. So I'm in New York. We have another brother that's in Chicago, another sister that's in D.C. We'll pool our resources, but we would create or we would buy a business for black people in Atlanta. So that's how that would work. So it doesn't necessarily benefit a person where they're from. It benefits us as a whole. What we are going to do is use a portion of our profits to hire lawyers and lobbyists. The lawyers and the lobbyists are going to combat this racial police brutality, and that will benefit us as a total in this community, in the black community. We will be trying to organize boycott. That also will benefit us nationwide, and that's another reason why we want to use this distributed model. We do not want there to be like the type of leadership where the head get knocked off and then, you know, no one knows what the plan is. So that's the reason why we have the blueprint. The blueprint is what guides us or basically are the guideposts to what this movement is about. So with that said, I want to talk about one of the issues. So one of the things that we discussed in the blueprint is poverty and how it, and, you know, single black mothers and things like that. That's going to be the topic to open up for discussion. I just want to go through, you know, something happened today that brought it to my mind. I'm going to put everyone on mute. I will present the topic. If you want to weigh in, if you have something that you want to contribute, a comment or a question or anything, press *6 on your phone. And then you would be in the questioning, you would be in the Q&A queue, and I will just unmute your microphone, and then you could present what you want to present to the group. Keep in mind, so normally we allow everyone ample time to say what they want to say, but try to keep your comment or whatever it is for about 2 or 3 minutes, because sometimes these town halls, they could run really, really long, and then we never really come to the conclusion. So with that said, I'm going to put it in lecture mode and mute everyone else's microphone. Brother Kareem, how you doing?
What's going on, Brother Lou?
Okay, here we go. Okay, so the reason why I wanted to bring up this issue of black poverty is because it leads our people to, I believe that it's one of the root causes for the lack of unity in our community. It leads our people to do desperate things because they don't have enough. And sometimes it makes them do things where it's like showing a lack of pride. Case in point, so I was talking to a brother today. About a month back, there was an incident where there were some Arab store owners, and they held a black man at gunpoint and whipped him with a sword and, you know, all these other different things, basically demeaned this guy. The brothers in the community got together, and they shut the store down, basically, what they did. They went in, they stood in front of it, they barred people from going in, they, you know, raised hell with the Irish store owners, and they went to the city, and they had the store shut down. The Arab guys, you know, whatever legal wranglings they did, they tried to open the store. These brothers went back again and said that they made like a buy and said that these guys were selling drug paraphernalia. So they brought like a scale to measure drugs, and they brought some like baggies and things like that. The store was shut down when it was under investigation, but then the store opened back up. The brothers went right back to the store, and then they brought that incense stuff, that K2 or K12, whatever that is, the drug that got these guys, you know, going crazy, got the kids going crazy. They brought that. They went back to the city, had the store shut down again. The Arab guys did something, and they opened back up. The brothers went back again and said that there was a problem with their liquor license, and just kept these guys shut down for about 2 months. This incident happened, 2 or 3 months. I was talking to him today, and he was telling me he was so disappointed. And I said, "What's the matter?" He was like, "I'm sick to my stomach." He said, because he and the other brothers that actually put their necks on the line went out there, shut down this store, tried to stand up for the community, and then these Arab guys opened up, and all they did was threw a barbecue. They had a cookout, and everybody from the community came in and started supporting the business again. So they stood there, and they tried to block the door, and everybody was like, "Get out the way. That wasn't my husband. That wasn't my boyfriend that got hurt." So then they would say, "Well, listen, there's an incident that just happened where an Arab guy just kicked this little boy and broke his leg. Well, I don't care. That's not my son. Let me get my cigarettes. Let me get my beer. They giving out free chicken. They giving out free hot dogs. I want to feed my kids," things like that. So this brother, he was really disgusted, and he was using words, "F the black community, da-da-da." And I told him, you know, you stood up. You was the champion for our brothers and sisters. But I was like, you know, sometimes when you do these things, you're going to be disappointed. But I was like, let's look at what the root cause is. And I said, well, are the people in that area, are they impoverished? Would these people look at a free meal as something that's actually valuable to them? And he thought about it. He said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, that's like one of the root causes for why our people do some of the things that they do. They don't have enough. And so sometimes you want to do things to make you feel, and it's not even sometimes, all the time. You want to do something that makes you feel better about yourself. And so you get a few dollars, and you want to go and instead of you saving or doing something, you know, positive with the money or something beneficial, you just go out and take the whole family out and pay for a meal that you know is going to blow all the money, or buy Jordans or a good bag or whatever it is that you need to feel better. And so part of this organization, one of our plans is really to address that, especially in regards to the single mothers out here, which make up 78% of the people living at or below the poverty line. Because we figure once we're able to get more of our sisters and brothers, like at a point where they're comfortable, where they feel that they're making enough money, then we think that they would be able to resist some of the oppressive temptations. That's just my position on it. If anyone wants to weigh in or comment in regards to this topic, this subject, possible solutions. Like I said, the blueprint, our solution is to pool our resources and buy large manufacturing companies, buy supermarket chains, you know, things like that, so we can put hundreds and even thousands of our brothers and sisters to work. We want to concentrate on a major black city, so that way we can tackle, so that we can have a major impact, have the rest of the black community in America looking at us saying, "Wow, they did that," and like, "Yeah, and we're coming to your city next." And then we're sure, you know, that will allow us to build momentum and get more people on board, more members on board. So if anyone has anything that they want to weigh in or comment on in regards to that, we're going to put it in Q&A mode, and you can press star 6 on your phone. Okay, looks like no one has anything they want to comment on in regards to that. All right, that's the first. Okay, so we have Sister Bonnie in the queue. Okay. Sister Bonnie.
Yes, sir.
Sister? Yes.
I don't have a question. I have a comment. I totally agree with that. I have seen too many of our people who are without food, they're in need. And if it's a situation of feeding my kids or dealing with these people that I really don't particularly want to deal with, then I'm going to deal with those people. And I've seen this. I've been in that boat. It, not saying that it's right, because it really isn't. It hurts our community even more. But it just seems to me that they use that against us quite a bit because of the fact that we don't have, they know we don't have, and so they use it to their advantage. They use it to their advantage. And we, and like you said, we got to do something about it. And the best thing we can do is to follow our blueprint and start providing some of the things that our people need.
Mm-hmm. So during that conversation with the brother, so, you know, I try to have solution-oriented thinking. So they have their movement. They have this. So they're in South Carolina, and they have their organization, and they're, you know, so like us, they are political and economic in nature. But one of the things that came up during our conversation was, okay, so maybe this current generation, maybe those parents now, they're in a situation where they, you know, where they have to do what they have to do to feed their children. But we was like, you know, maybe they could break that cycle, right? So maybe that doesn't have to happen for the next generation. And we were like, all right, so what, you know, so I'm thinking, like, what can I tell him or that organization or that community, what can they do now? And one of the first things that came to my mind was to go around and start, like, a campaign to get all of those people to get life insurance policies, right? So those people, so a life insurance policy, you can get, you know, I don't want to quote anything, but you could get one for like $25-$50 or whatever it is a month, and you could have, you know, at least $10,000-$50,000 that you could leave to your children as a start off point. So that way they wouldn't just, you know, they wouldn't be starting from scratch. They wouldn't starve being impoverished. I think in addition to leaving that insurance money, there should also be a plan of how and what to do with the money, how to manage the money, because we don't, you know, our people don't necessarily have the know-how or the knowledge to deal with large sums of money to make it last or to rotate it and whatever else. But I just brought that up with the brother, and he thought that was a good idea. He said it was something that he wanted to look into. I figured, you know, let me share that with anyone on the call, if that's something that sounds interesting to anyone, or, you know, they're not in a position right now, but they want to look forward to that. Life insurance would definitely be, you know, one simple, easy way to stop the cycle of poverty.
I agree with that. I know here in Phoenix, the black community is trying to get a nonprofit put together here in the Phoenix area for the purpose of helping our people with things like, okay, I can't pay my electric bill. We can help you pay that. Because a lot of these charities that they have out there, they don't do jack for us. I know here in Phoenix, they don't. They don't. They will turn your stuff off. It can be 115 degrees outside, and they'll turn your power off, and you're sitting in this house in a very dangerous situation with no air conditioning at all. And they don't care. They don't care. So we're trying to get something like that done here, as well as getting some other businesses started here in the Phoenix area as well.
Right.
Now, there's not a whole lot of, there's blacks here, but there's not, we're scattered all over the city. We don't have a community that's predominantly black here, where in a lot of cities you do.
Right.
So they're looking at doing that. They're trying to get grocery stores and you know, just the things that we need in our area where we can support our own community, give our own people jobs, and give them a decent wage where they can live. Because a lot of these companies I know here, the company I work for is crazy. They are they're actually doing things that will create more poverty, because they're laying off people, and the people they're laying off are, one, your older people, the people who have tenure. If you've got 8-10 years or more seniority on that job, they're getting rid of you, and they're bringing in these young kids that don't know what they're doing, don't know the job, and giving those jobs to them, and most of them are white that they're giving the jobs to. There's very few minorities that are getting the jobs. Very few blacks or Hispanics, you know, they're not getting the jobs. It's the white that are getting the jobs.
All right. All right. We have Sister Kokoya in the queue. You have anything else you want to add in summary, or?
No, that's all I had.
Okay. Thank you, Sister Bonnie.
Thank you.
Right. Sister Kokoya? Hello?
Yeah. I just wanted to say what you mentioned about the life insurance policies. I think that's a great concept. To create wealth in our community and leaving, you know, getting our young generation set up. I think that's a great concept, and that's all I had to say.
So you're saying that we should try to make it, or actually, it should become a campaign. It should become a campaign or initiative. Because I mean, realistically speaking, it really doesn't hurt. It's something that everyone really needs. I think the payments would be negligible, depending on how much money you make. But I also feel that it needs to come with like instructions or something with it, right? So you just don't give your kids a couple of hundred grand or 50 grand or whatever it is, and just let them go off and buy, like, you know, a Lexus and some Jordans or whatever. It probably would even be better to put it in a trust.
Yeah.
It would probably be better to put it in a trust with certain instructions, allow them to get some money, and then allow them to receive, I guess, something like an allowance or a stipend or whatever it is, a monthly allowance or whatever.
Yeah. Other communities do that. I mean, that's where it starts.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, the Jewish community does that. I know. They do that a lot. They insure everyone. Everyone gets insured. So, okay. Anything else you want to contribute?
That was it. Thank you.
Okay, sister. All right. So that was all we had on that topic. Anyone else wants to weigh in regards to the poverty, to the way that poverty is affecting our brothers and sisters, press star 6. If not, we'll move on to the next we'll move on to the next topic. To the next. Okay. All right, so I'm going to end. Okay, wait, Sister Barbara and Brother George. Okay, Sister Barbara?
Yes, I'm here. My okay, question sister. Is there still a, because I like the idea of the health insurance, the life insurance for everybody. I like that. But I would like, if possible, for us to see about getting that through a black insurance company that sells life insurance.
Okay, well, okay.
Now, there was one, but I'm not sure if they are still in business. I think they may be, but and I can't think of the name. I want to say it's like North Carolina Mutual or something like that. I forget the name of it. But they started out a black insurance company. And if they're still out there, I'd be interested in putting that business to them. That also would help our community.
I agree. I agree. It's like I said, I didn't give it full thought in regards to that because that was just a suggestion that I made. That was just a suggestion that I made to to that brother. But it is definitely something to consider. We can definitely revisit it. Definitely.
Okay.
All right, sister.
All right.
Peace. All right, well, now we have Brother George. Brother George?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you can.
Okay. What? I have a lot of comments, but I'll try to keep it as short as possible. I have not had a chance to look at the blueprint. And I'm not sure what I was doing yesterday to come across your website, and somehow I clicked on something from an email, and it may have been the Bank Black email. Maybe there's a link or something connected because I am through the Buy Black Bank initiative. I did open up an account, and so I did not have a chance to look at the blueprint, but I did see a lot of. I think I went through a questionnaire and it asked me four or five questions, and it gave me the information for tonight, so I'm new at this. But I have several comments, one of them being for most of my adult life, I've been in business for myself, and as a result of that, all the issues I'm hearing, buying businesses and things like that, for the initiative in my mind to work, there has to be a specific approach. And my question would be, and my point, and I'll deal with two issues. One is, if the initiative is to buy businesses, I would suggest that the group or the identified entity that's going to buy businesses look at certain industries. If you're attempting to, as a group, create jobs, or you're creating wealth, because I look at them as two different things, the wealth being the shareholders of that company, whether it's manufacturing widgets, whether it's manufacturing car seats, tires, whatever it might be. The other part is if you're looking at creating jobs so that those people are raising up out of poverty, and that's a distinct different agenda. To the insurance thing, though it's good, it creates long-term generational wealth, but it doesn't do anything for the short term. It doesn't. It would not address what I think, or at least what I am under the impression that what I saw on your website that you're trying to do. So I like the fact that you're a solution-oriented person, Brother Lou. I would like to participate. like I said, this is my first time. I only looked at your information briefly, but I liked what I saw because of I'm just, as Fannie Lou Hamer once said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I want to see change. I'm now in my mid to late 50s, and I want to see some more action. And now that I have the wisdom, knowledge, and money to do so, I'd like to make some things happen in my own community. I'm one of the people that grew up in the neighborhood, went to college, had successful businesses, and you want to do better. You want to do better for your children, so you move out to the suburbs. Well, that was actually the wrong thing. You know, when I look back on it, I should have stayed in the neighborhood. But I lived in Columbus, Ohio, and the best thing to do was to move out to nice neighborhoods, bigger houses, golf courses, et cetera. So I want to figure out how to help create jobs, pass on knowledge, and all that. And I want to find the right vehicle to do that with. And hopefully I can provide some help, counsel, review, advice, whatever I can do to help this organization move forward. And I'll leave the floor to you.
Okay, to your point in regards to the life insurance, that's not in the blueprint. That's not actually one of the main points that we were discussing. That was something that I just came up with in the discussion with this brother that was so frustrated, but he put his neck out there to take action, right? So, and this is a brother. He has a construction company in that city. He has white partners and things like that. And he went out there and pretty much put his black face on and went down to City Hall and told him. I mean, you guys can see the video if you go on the Facebook page. His name is Sean Middleton. So you can see one of the videos where he's sitting there, he's telling them, you know, what's going on with the construction and whatever's going on in that city. And he's basically putting himself out there for the community. And he's not getting any love back, or at least they didn't stick to their guns. But I know he's the type of brother that we would need in this type of fight. So I was trying to offer him something. But even still, right, so the in regards to the businesses, our first business is to – so this whole organization is based on doing things that black people are using existing behavior to create change or to create a positive thing, right? So – we don't have the resources to get out there with bullhorns and talk to every black person and make them change their mind. They're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So our first initiative is to use existing consumer behavior, which is shopping, right, and use that to our benefit. So we will be creating a shopping portal and a shopping app so that our brothers and sisters, they can shop through that portal, shop through that app. It won't cost them a dime extra, and we would be able to receive a commission or a referral fee for sending the mass of people that we hope we can send to these businesses. I have already worked on the relationships, so those things are in place. It's just that the technology is not built out yet. And we were hoping at this point that we would have our 2,000 members, because that's our initial campaign. But we are shy of the 2,000 member mark because that's what we were going to use to develop it. So some other members and I, we were talking about just coming out of our own pockets and developing the thing. And I was like, no, I don't want to take more money from people other than the membership, right? So we have a membership. We have this is a association membership, and I don't want to take any more money than the membership dues. So I'm trying to figure out another creative way to do it.
How do you become a member?
Oh, when you watch the blueprint, there is a button there that will ask you, you want to become a member, but you can go to the website, you can look at it. So memberships are $10 at the silver level, $25 at the gold, and $50 at the platinum level.
Okay. That's no problem. Yeah. I'll do that tomorrow.
Okay. Excellent, brother. Appreciate you. And so then the next thing, so in regards to buying our first large-scale business, we had a brother who was a grant researcher. So you've been in business for a while, so I'm sure you are 100% aware that there are minority set-asides and government grants for minority businesses. Unfortunately, we never get a chance to claim those because we don't have businesses in the particular industry that those brands are for. So one of them is, like, for instance, like the military. They have money set aside for minority made, like, boots and rucksacks and whatever. Yep. We don't have any of those. We don't have any manufacturing companies that make this stuff. But if we're able to pool our resources, we would be able to buy one of these manufacturing plants. Since it's the government, the government probably pays $300-$400 for these kind of boots. Mm-hmm. We can put hundreds or thousands of our brothers and sisters in the boot making factory. We can pay them a living wage, $15, $16, $17, $18, $20 an hour, and still be able to make. So that is our first goal outside of this platform, because we want to use. So you know, we're really not. Well, when I initially made the plan, we weren't going to rely on the government. But the brother that was the member, his name was Brother Damba. He was like, "You would be a fool not to do it because that is money that is just sitting there for it." Then he pointed me to a brother that was in PG County. I don't know. They have this show, the Prince George or something like that. It's like in Maryland, Virginia, somewhere over there.
Right. Yep.
Swanky black folks, right? And yep. they have the show on it. So he pointed me to a brother who did the same thing. He had an IT company, and he used the government, set aside the thing, and he grew it to about a $100 million company. Those are the type of numbers I like. Those types of numbers get me excited, and he did it on the government's back. Because he was one of the only minorities to do it. What the brother also did was he secured what was necessary RFP, right? So
right.
He worked and he partnered with, like, so when he had to do, I think something was like satellites or something, or some silicone chips or whatever it was, and he didn't know how to make it, he went and partnered with a white company, said, "Hey, listen, I'll be the front man on this," and blah, 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 blah. So the blueprint in regards to how we're going to do that is laid out. If you have some expertise, we would welcome it, absolutely. But those are our initial business plans.
Well, I'll say this briefly, and I'll let other people ask. But I do know a lot about the contracting process. In addition to most of my business life, I was a fast food operator, so I owned at one point in time I owned Church's Chicken franchises, owned and operated them, sold them back in 2002. The federal contracting process is a good, strong possibility with cash flow if you identify the right kind of business. There's always, the government buys stuff every day. In fact, all the states buy a lot of stuff every day, and that if you're looking at acquiring an existing business, certainly there's plenty of them out there to be purchased. It's just a matter of, like you said, and like the point of these conversations is being able to pool the right money. And the tricky part, I think, is going to be the discussion with respect to living wage and all that other stuff, because I think that's a different kind of model. Because if you're taking a business, if you're telling me personally, because I'm an entrepreneur and a capitalist, if you're saying to me, "We're buying this business for $2 million and we're gonna drive revenue to X, to say $10 million to $50 million or whatever," is it your goal to make enough money off the business to reinvest in the community with, you know, housing and things like that, or are you going to take that wealth to do something else with it, versus are you looking at it for a vehicle to hire people? Training and hiring and those kind of things take a lot of money, and so as a result of that, you become a quasi nonprofit. And for entrepreneurs and capitalists, that's a hard sell, because ultimately we're in the business to make money. So I've made money. I want to reinvest it in the community. I don't know the best route is if I can get something made, and this is going to be the government's argument too, that if I get something made at $7 an hour and that widget or that boot or whatever, I'm sitting out this RFP, and because you can find everything in the Commerce Business Daily, which the government has everything on what they buy. If I'm the government, I'm trying to beat you down on the price, which they typically do. Can I both make a lot of money to reinvest in the black community and pay a living wage, or do I just say on this particular business, we bought this business for $2 million. It's a business that sells specific items to the government. Based on that, we're going to use this money. We're going to, you know, use the minority set aside and the 8A programs, which are federal programs, to ramp up the business to $20 million. And with the selling of that business in 5 years, we can take it and build more houses in New York City or in Maryland or wherever it is you're going to do. I'd like to see a secondary strategy, because I don't know that specifically – the wage issue is going to be an issue simply because you're running a business, and the way you're supposed to run a business is you want to be as profitable as possible. And I know people will cringe at that. Some people may understand, but at the end, you ultimately are beholden to the shareholders. And the shareholders, though they may be understanding, I don't know if I would like to – I would be agreeable to it, but I don't know if I want to pay somebody $20 if we can get the – made for $12 an hour and use that profit to buy dilapidated buildings and rehab them, buy duplexes and rehab them, and take that wealth, because then you create more jobs, because you're rehabbing houses, you're creating housing for people, and you're helping the community. So I would like to have a shot at sending somebody an email to further my
I'll give you my direct number. I like where you're going. I hear the entrepreneurship. I hear the greed burning in you, brother. I love it. I'm the same way. So are you familiar with a B Corp? Right. So this thing is structured as a B Corp.
Okay.
Benefit
yep.
corporation. Okay. Right. So you can. So we can mash on the gas as much as we want to eke out as much profit, but then we could use the money in terms of the benefits, right? And so one of the benefits that we are going to do in terms of, like, contributing back to the black community, we're not giving anything away, right? Mm-hmm. I've already learned that lesson. You can't just give stuff away. That's why – so one of the models of this, and we're kind of going on. We got a brother Cujo in the queue, but you know, if no one answers, you could come back on. But one of the things that I thought about in conceiving this was that we have to make it profitable to invest in the black community. That's the problem right now. That's why we don't get. That's why there's no money coming to us, because we're not doing the right things with the money. So they're just like, well, you know what? Let them get their money however they're going to get it. Let them work their jobs. And now we just set these things up to take their money anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So basically how I'm looking at it, how I'm envisioning it is based on preliminary research. Even though the government will beat us down through the minority set-asides and all of these different things, there will be basically no competition. So there's really nothing. That's just money. That's just like shooting fish in a barrel. It's really nothing. I mean, so we're not going to have too much competition, especially in some of the areas. If we look at and we identify certain set-asides in something like cell phone antenna installations or whatever it is, and we don't know how to do that. We go and buy a cell phone, you know, we go and buy that company or a company that's like that or into a company so that we have that skill set. And now where they may have been competitive and tell them, okay, cool, we want 20 grand because we're minority, we can charge 50 or we can do whatever. That's how I am envisioning that we would pay a living wage. Here is how we are giving back, though, to the black community. The people that work for our – right. So one of the major problems that we have like a problem with culture and more, I mean, for lack of a better word, like bad behavior in our community. And what's going to happen is anyone that works for us under this organization, there will be a code of conduct, which means that you will have to conduct yourself this particular way if you expect to get paid. And because we have pretty good pay, enticing pay, people will straighten up. I had a very candid conversation with a brother.
That creates
earlier.
Legal liability, though.
well. I'm going to be honest with you. Well, I mean, in New York City, they do it, right? So when you get a city job, when you get a job in New York City, there's a code of conduct. There's a certain thing that you're supposed to
do, right?
In accordance with that. So that's basically what this would be. In addition to that, now I guess this is kind of sort of given away, but I'm looking at it as reinvesting in the future. The men and the women that become employees of this organization, we want their babies. We want their children. We want them at, like, these community resource centers. We want to create something so that their kids aren't sitting home and being, like, latchkey kids or exposed to the streets or whatever it is. And while we have those children will be learning trades. They will be learning computers. They will be learning a new paradigm of what it means to be black. They will learn conflict resolution strategies. They will learn critical thinking strategies. We will be reinforcing their positive self-esteem, because that's what the long-term plan of this organization is about. And so, before you become a member, I want to ask you to watch the blueprint so that way you can see exactly, what this thing is about, right? So it's not like just one little key. Everything is like interwoven, and, it's I mean, for you, just from talking with you, I'm sure you'll be able to grasp exactly what's going on. There's a number there, but I'll text you my direct number, and you can give me a call, and we can have a full discourse in regards to everything. Because I think you would definitely bring a lot to the table, especially with your background and your experience.
I'll say this now. Like I said, I wanted to. Let everyone else get their part, but I'm in a simple initial discussion. I'm so excited that there are some possibilities. I would love to contribute. I can contribute a lot of 30 years of business ownership, buying and selling businesses, been at the top, been at the bottom, done all of it, and would volunteer my services if there's a document that has to be drafted, a purchase agreement that has to be done. I'd be willing to do any and all of that, knowing that it will benefit future generations of black children. And ultimately, everything that I saw yesterday, I will say everything is somehow touched by, and even the conversation that's been going on the last 45 minutes or whatever, is touched by education. So ultimately, I'm a big believer in you reduce poverty and self-hate and all those things by education. Because the people that go to those stores, if they knew more about who they were, they had more self-worth and had a better understanding of the economics, and that's, again, education. All of the things that there were, I think there were six things that were listed in the questionnaire I did. All those things are positively impacted by education. So I will leave it with that. Again, we can exchange information. I'm willing to do any and all to help further any cause related to economic development for black folks.
Okay, so love to hear that, Brother George. Love to hear that. All right. So next in the queue, we have Brother Cujo. Brother Cujo? Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Brother Cujo? Yep.
Okay, I got a question. I'm thinking about that situation at the store where they did all of the work to close the store down, and eventually the people came back. One of my bigger questions is why? Why did they come back?
What do you mean? Why did the brothers go down to shut down the store?
No. Why did the people in the neighborhood decide to start shopping at the store again?
Because the guys had a barbecue. The guys had a barbecue in the parking lot and were giving away free food. And so they came in, they got the free food, and started walking in the store buying their beer and cigarettes again. and the brother was in there trying to block people from buying stuff, and they was telling him, yo, get out my way. This ain't, that ain't had nothing to do with me. My kids, da-da-da, blah-blah-blah. The next store's too far, and, you know, all of these other things. Which brings me to the aspect of, like, with the boycotting, right? So the other brother that he was with, that he did the boycott with, well, they attempted to do the boycott. I told him, I said, well, listen, bro, it's really, really hard to say you're not going to use XYZ services or XYZ store if you're not providing alternatives to the people. And I said, and so the brother that I went with him, one of his main problems was the poison or the paraphernalia and things that they were selling in the community, you know, so he doesn't want the dope boys to be able to buy scales and baggies and things like that. And, I, you know, I told him, I said, listen, bro, those guys wouldn't be selling that stuff unless there was demand. And it's not like these guys, put scales under the counter and say, hey, my man, you want to waste some coca or whatever. That didn't happen. The guys came in and had that demand, and they was like, yo, hey, you know, I could get you a scale. That's basically how that worked. So, so basically that's why the people support it. I mean, it's supply and demand. The people, they want to be supplied. They have a demand, and they want that supply. You know, they want that demand met.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, particularly around Chicago, is it appears to me that the people tend to have a lack of self-respect, and they allow these people to treat them horribly.
Right.
And they don't have, there's no relationship or solidarity in the black community as to where when somebody gets treated horribly, everybody even has an emotion about it or feels any type of way. And, I mean, that's pretty much confirmed by some of the things you said that the patrons were saying, well, that's not my family. That's not my brother, cousin, or whatever. But I've seen with my own eyes somebody be completely disrespected and they still shop there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
around
the Chicagoland area, it's about 20 different, at least 20 different places that I've never spent my money in just because of the level of disrespect that they've shown and that I've seen them show toward other people. And it makes me wonder sometimes if that store being black owned would actually be enough, if a minimum wage or slightly above minimum wage job would actually work to change a person's character. I think his name is Brother George. He was mentioning the part about education or his value for education and the person knowing about themselves. And I could definitely see the value in having the community center, but it makes me wonder with that being a large with having a large focus towards the kids and stuff. I'm wondering, I just have a question about what would be the timeline from kids actually getting education about themselves to training for adults to go in certain fields, and how would we work it to where we would actually be providing these jobs and stuff like that.
Well, I don't know, to be honest with you, because I don't know how long it's going to take. So we have, Brother Kareem, right, he works with kids in the school system all the time. And, you know, some of the reports that he gives me is troubling, right? So it's not like we're going to be able to just go in and start talking to these kids and then they're going to be able to comprehend and everything is going to be hunky-dory right off the bat. So I'm be honest with you, I would really like to defer to an educational professional. So again, my biggest thing is bring in the right people to do the right job. I'm not, I have the idea of what we should be doing, but I don't necessarily know how to do that. I know one of the biggest things is that these kids need to be shown that someone actually cares. There was this big thing with a teacher in Connecticut. Her students were going acting crazy because they didn't have breakfast. A lot of them were coming to school and they weren't to have breakfast. So she started providing snacks and cakes and milk and things like that, allowing them to take some extra because sometimes they needed to take some for their brothers and sisters. And then by virtue of providing breakfast, the grades in her class skyrocketed. So that's something that probably would have never dawned on me. So I would like to just have, we just need the money to get someone in who are able to deal with these children. I was talking to a white guy the other day, and this guy said, the school that he went to in high school, they were sifting and sorting these kids. He was like, so if you were in school, once they give you like this aptitude test or whatever it was, if you weren't passing this or you didn't reach this particular level, they started funneling you into a vocation so that you can still earn a living. And if you showed the propensity for education or academia, they would funnel you into further academics. I mean, I think that's right. I don't care about political correctness. I think we need to bring something like that back. So now he's an older dude, so he's in like in his 60s or something. So I don't know how long ago he's talking about, but it was a while back. But I mean, personally, we would institute something like that. I don't have a problem. Listen, man, you don't want to read, you don't want to do this, but you're real creative. You work good with your hands. You know what, little dude? We're gonna go put you someplace, work with your hands, so that way you can go and be. So that you're not just getting in trouble, so that your talent and your potential isn't waste. Another little kid, you can write good, you can read good, you're good with math. You know what? We're going to funnel you to computers or whatever it is. That's how I want to look at it. And if you're employing their mother or their father and you tell them this is part of the code of conduct, then it is what it is. I mean, that's just, that's how I feel about it. We have Sister Rhonda and Brother Ron. Hey, Brother Ron, how you doing? We have two more people in the queue. We also have a caller on that I haven't been able to tag. So, Brother Cujo, if there's anything else, if you don't want to add anything or you do want to add anything in closing?
No, I'll tap back in later. Let some other people get in.
Okay, appreciate you, brother. All right, there we go. 609, caller 609. I haven't tagged you. Let me, hello, is that, no, that's brother George. 609, your name? Hello? 609 area code? Hello? Hello? Hello, 609?
Hello?
Yes, how you doing?
Hi, this is
your name?
This is Kiyota from New Jersey. I had to call from another number because my phone died.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But
okay,
I just have a question.
Okay, hold on, sister. Hold on. Okay.
Hello?
Yes, sister.
It's just one thing that I've noticed. I just recently started going onto Facebook pretty recently. And what I've been noticing is with people of color, they tend to focus more on negative aspects of Facebook. Like, for example, if I post something educational on Facebook, you get no likes, no comments, and it could be something that can be very informative. Like, I can go on, I look stuff up on YouTube and I share it, on Facebook to let, people that I know, engage your minds into something different. You'll get maybe likes from, like, two people, and that's, that's about it. But if I write something ignorant on there, I get like a lot of, responses. And what it seems like to me is a lot of, and I'm not even saying just the youth, but even some people in my age group that I'm kind of surprised about are followers. They seem to want to follow whatever is popular. So I kind of feel like if we can make this movement something more popular, you know, not, I don't know how to really explain it, but if we can make this to be a more popular thing, then maybe it'll be more people willing to kind of jump on the bandwagon, because it seems like bad behavior is more promoted now than doing the right thing and understanding, you know, that you're valuable. That's almost kind of how I see it. So I think it's a good idea what you're saying about, like, promoting self-esteem in our community some type of way. Unity, I like the fact that you said call each other brother and sister, because I hate when I go on Facebook and then I see two girls fighting and then there's guys around and don't break it up, you know. So I just really think that's a good thing that you said, and I really appreciate the fact that you said that.
Sister, that can be a whole topic unto itself. I just briefly, I want to say we recognize that. We recognized that a few months ago. And so what our strategy has been, I'm kind of falling back from it because it's tripping me out. We recognized that months ago. So what I was doing was finding the dumb stuff, and then we were piggybacking our message on top of that, right? So let's say if it's, I don't think we posted any fights. We posted like a cop fighting or something like that, like somebody beating up a cop, but we didn't post any other. But let's just say it's something ignorant. We would say, hey, we need to stop this nonsense, show the ignorance, and then say, go to blackwildersmatter.com to stop this nonsense. What happens is it circulates crazy, and then the more discerning of our brothers and sisters are actually able to see what's going on, and then they come on, and then, you know, and so, you know, they come on the call, and so we're able to reach the people that we want to reach. We definitely realize that. We've identified that. My last few posts have been things that have been constructive. They have gotten no circulation. I've kind of been like burnt out because I can't stand watching that nonsense. But I mean, sister, we can revisit that and we can open it up for everyone to discuss it. You know, because this that could probably take up like the rest of our call. Why that is, we can break down the dynamic on social media, right? Because people are bored and so they're just looking to be engaged with something, and so most people don't turn towards learning something educational, right? So if you just pay attention to how it was in school, people sit there, they're bored out of their minds learning something, right? It's only like really the nerds that want to do whatever. So we are nerds, brothers and sisters. I just want y'all to know, every single one of you guys are nerds, especially Brother Cujo. All right. We have Sister Rhonda and Brother Ron in the queue. We can definitely get back to that, though, Sister, because I want to talk about that. All right, cool. Sister Rhonda, hello.
Yes, I think his name was Brother George. Brother George was speaking about education. That, and as far as the young lady too with the Facebook, I have no problem with negative responses or whatever. And you could go on my site if you wish, because we do a lot of educating in our groups, the black groups we have for the young and the older groups. We put them together, and the older people kind of reprimand these younger people in the group, so that if you're going to do right, you're going to do right. If not, we're just going to block you, because now the black race is running behind the eight ball. There's no time for nonsense, and people have to move on. I'd just like to say one thing about, and I know you said you were going to revisit the insurance thing. It's going to be brief. Actuarially, for life insurance, blacks are at negative, so to speak. And when I say actuarially, what I mean is they set up different rules for us. I worked for an insurance company for 10 years in New York. I'm from the Bronx, but I worked in Manhattan. And the rules are kind of, they put up certain guidelines for us when we're expected to die, at what age or whatever. That's why there's a big discrepancy between male and female, how much it'll cost and whatnot. So when you look at the insurance aspect of it, just kind of see if it's feasible. And I did live down south for a while, for a minute. And down there, it was really kind of terrible because the blacks that had invested in life insurance were when it came time to produce, they wasn't given what they had invested. So I would just like to throw that out there. But the main meat of my question is the education. I homeschool one of my sons, and I found that to be satisfying for myself and for him because he was not getting what the school system was offering, and I wasn't going to have him be on somebody's corner selling drugs. So what I did was to take him out. He was 13. I took him out, and I educated him on my own. But I would advise, this is just something that I would advise the group there, if we cannot find somebody that can educate their own child or they feel uncomfortable or they don't have the knowledge to educate their child, there's somebody in that community that possibly, you know, can do that. Because, I mean, a lot of people have been laid off or whatever in different fields, and if we could kind of, you know, accommodate the people that have been in order to educate the children in the fields without actually it being on one parent that may not know how to homeschool a child.
All right. Well, in regards to the insurance company, Sister Barbara, she looked up those black life insurance companies that she was talking about, and one is called North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance, and the other is Atlanta Life. So, I mean, that's something to look at. Me personally, I would try to see who actually underwrites those policies. Like, I don't know if they're underwriting their own policies. Because if they aren't, then some of those guidelines that you mentioned, some of those things would come into play. So, I mean, we would definitely have to take a deeper look at that. But, you know, like I said, the life insurance thing was something that, you know, just came in my head at the time when I was talking with the brother. There's a lot of nuances in regards to that. So, I am by no means saying that, you know, that's what we need to, you know, trying to give advice in regards to that because I'm not a professional. But, Sister, yes, I appreciate your input in regards to the homeschooling as well. We have our brother Kareem in the queue, and he is familiar with some of the things that happens in the school system. And we also have Brother Ron. So if you want to give anything else in summary, do you have anything else?
That's fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Sister. Brother Ron. What's going on, Brother Ron?
How you doing, Brother Lou? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Sorry for coming in late, brothers and sisters. So what I did hear a little bit about the boycott in certain stores. You know, in most communities, everyone wants to be pro-black until it's inconvenient to them. What we need is some of these facts. You know, super pro-black, but I got to think about it.
Yeah,
super pro-black until it's an inconvenience. You know, I'm not going to shop here. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to watch this. But you know, until it's convenient to me. So what would be good if we could get some of the black stores in those areas, maybe not on that block, but a few blocks away in those areas, to give a little discount when we're trying to boycott a certain store. Like when I was a kid, I don't know any of the other guys, and I had to go to the laundromat and do the laundry for the family and everything. My father sent me to the store, to the laundromat. I'd go extra 3-4 blocks out my way to save a quarter on a quarter machine. So if they could all get together, like, you know what, all right, this store's doing this, my people are boycotting it. So, you know, we're going to slash some of the prices here for the next month or so to have our people come in. If they see an influx of people coming in, they're not really losing a lot of money. You know what I mean? We can get
So that's like part of the reason that we want to form this membership, this association, right? Because the whole purpose, I made a video out there, and it was like, so we have these businesses, and let's say we're conducting a boycott. We could actually subsidize the businesses with the membership dues, right? So the membership dues are there to facilitate all the different things that we want to do. It's a lot of stuff. But if you take a guy, let's say you take a guy who owns a store. So let's take me like with my shop, right?
Right.
I can't afford to like take a haircut on nothing because I got overhead, I got lights, I got bills or whatever. But let's say that I'm part of this organization and this organization says, hey, you know what? We're not patronizing a guy up here at the shop. Cut your prices. We're able to subsidize that. We're able to help you. That's the organization making an investment so that we can make a statement, and then the plan would be to run this guy out, buy his business or whatever it is, or maybe even have him become a member and contribute to the organization. So, right. I mean, I'm definitely in agreement with putting the squeeze on these people, but one of the main things is when you start talking about boycotts, like especially like small local businesses like that, right, we have to pick and choose our fights. Because running a store is not easy. A lot of people say that, and, you know, I had an argument with a sister. And not an argument, but just a disagreement.
Strong debate.
She said that all they do is stand there and take our money. They don't even do no work. They don't do anything. And I explained to her, that's not possible.
I work retail 15 years.
Yeah, that's, and I told her, I said, they're standing on their feet. Let's just say, we were talking about like the Arab store. These dudes, they live in their stores. They build like little shelves above the Pampers and sleep in there. They have no social life 24 hours a day. You can go there on Thanksgiving and get something from the store. You can go there on Christmas, and when nothing else is open, you can go to the corner store. So these guys are living and breathing for these stores, and you'll be hard-pressed to find some black people that want to do that type of work. That's going to replace them. You would need to have black people working in shifts, like, and I mean probably about six to do the work that probably two or four of these, not even four. Like, usually it's like two or three dudes running a whole store 24 hours a day for, like, years.
A lot of it is because it's their store. A lot of us.
Actually, it's not. Actually, they do like this buddy system, but I don't want to get into all of that. But it's like they work at the store until they build up and save enough money to go open up the other store, and a guy who owns that store partners with them so they can open a store. They're really, really sharp with the way how they do this thing. They piggyback, so it's like almost every dude winds up owning like a store and a half. Like, every dude winds up being a partner in the last dude's store. It's real interesting the way that these guys set it up. But we got Brother Kareem in the queue, and I think he wants to talk about the school, the kids. You have anything else you want to contribute in summary, brother?
No. Just seeing my little input.
Okay. Well, appreciate you. And we missed you last week, Brother Ron. We missed you.
I'm on vacation going to North Carolina. I'm sorry, brother. I'm sorry. No excuses.
Well, phone. They got phones in North Carolina, right? Now, I'm just talking about you, brother. All right. All right. Miss you. All right. Peace.
Thank you.
Brother Kareem. Hello, brother? Brother Kareem.
Brother Lou, you hear me? Yeah, Brother Lou,
yes,
I'm
can.
Here. Good evening, brothers and sisters. I was eating when you was talking about the life insurance. I wanted to know how did that translate into wealth into the black community. I missed that whole thing, bro. I'm sorry. If you could just summarize it real quick I just want to know so I could talk about with the children, if you don't mind.
Basically we were saying that. So most times when people die in a black community, they got to, like, throw, like, a fish fry or cook dinners or something like that, you know, to go and cover the final expense costs and things like that. So basically, you know, I was saying, you know, people could go and get some life insurance. This is what I suggested to the brother. You know, he said he was in a part of Beaufort, South Carolina, someplace like that. It was like the people are really impoverished. And I was suggesting, well, maybe they could go and get a small life insurance policy, leave some money for their kids, final expenses, I don't know, maybe about $8,000, $7,000, something like that, get something cheap, $5,000. They're in Beaufort, South Carolina. I figure it's not going to cost as much as it would in New York or something like that. And then they could leave maybe about $20,000-$50,000 or something for their kids with instructions to invest it or leave it in a trust and allow them to withdraw allowed them to draw a stipend or something like that. That's all it was. And it wasn't even a fully thought-out idea. It was just something that I was just saying off the top of the head to try to calm this brother down because he was really upset that his efforts went in vain. All right?
Yeah, well, as far as the kids and the lack of education, what's going on, you know, the more and more I go into the schools and out in the cities, I'm seeing that, like, the lack of respect is not even there. And I do like a pre and post survey question, like when I go into the schools. And as I go through these pre and post surveys, I'm realizing that 8th and 9th graders can't even formulate sentences, right? And it's scary because even when we talk about life insurance, even if you do leave these kids something, they don't have the full, they don't have the know-how what to do with the money. They're living solely off what the rappers is doing. So we have to find a way to get them and educate them outside of that school system, because the school system is failing them. And I think it's a ploy that they continue to fail them because they have the money for everything else for our inner cities, to grow trees, to teach them how to grow trees, to teach them, to go different places that are irrelevant to their environment. They don't want to teach them how to think correctly because I think that they want them to stay in this avenue of dumb. You know, our kids are really in a state of dumbness. So my thing is with the Black Wallace Man is we have to target our kids because when we die off, they take over. So we could be as sharp as we want. And we can have all the knowledge we want. But how are we going to get it to our kids? I need help with this because it's really scary. I was in a school the other day, and I seen a student stand up and really tell a teacher, like, you're not going to do nothing to me. And the teacher was, like, stand up, like, scared, like. And I had to intervene and let her know, like, you know, everyone outside is looking at you like a savage, young lady, so you have to carry yourself in a different way. And the way our young women are right now is, like, really bananas because they're talking like men, they're acting like men, they're doing things, their sexual activity is like men, they're not scared of anything. So we really need to get the education to them because when we die off, it has to be somebody to pick up what we're doing. And if our kids can't do it, what are we doing it for? That's all I want to say, brother.
All right. Well, I mean, in regards to the schools, you would know better than I, but I think one of the biggest problems then is like behavioral, right? And so the teachers can only do but so much in regards to that behavior. And, you know, this is to your point in regards to how do we reach them and why the teachers are just passing them along. You got to understand, it's not like how it was back in the days when we grew up where you do something, the teacher hits you with the yardstick or whatever it was, hits you with the ruler, and then, you know, tell your mother, and then, you might get like a beating in front of class, something crazy like that. These days, these kids, they have no regard for no kind of authority, including their parents. So when you take a teacher, and remember, these teachers are also being younger. Remember when we were in school, the teachers who were old, they look old. They were more mature. They were older, right? So you got these young kids from the suburbs, most of them, some of them. They're not, you know, they don't know what's going on. And when they come across one of these kids with no filter, they're totally taken off guard. And then when they go and they're talking, you know, with their other teachers, their coworkers or whatever, they're saying, oh, well, what I do is I just ignore them or I send them to the principal or I do this. So basically this kid is just being, you know, shuffled along through school as long as he comes. So, you know, that's
and
about
you know what
as
else
much
too,
as
brother?
I, yeah.
And what else, too, is I noticed that I came and counted what like, a teacher was telling me about pedophilia amongst kids, and that threw me for a walk with the young women and the young men. Like that's a big thing right now, and that's what they're really caught up in. Because I never thought that you know, you will have kids in your school that are out of 10 kids, you have 3 sex offenders.
Whoa.
It's been like what is going on? Like, where, I know it starts in the home. I know it's in the home.
Maybe they're being abused or something. I don't know. That's a little bit. Our children are in a scary state, man.
You know, and it's the more that I hear, I bring to the attention of this group, so I could just get ways on how to address it, you know, because it's scary. And it's not really a lot of help out here for me from the black community as I push this rock. You know, everybody has kids, but nobody wants to help until it's their kid. You know, then it's too late. Well, go ahead, brother. And, oh, yeah, everybody, it's also Gun Violence Awareness Month, so if you have any orange, just try to wear some orange this month and reminisce of the people who suffer from gun violence and who are survivors. And so those of us who aren't with us, just so y'all know that June is the official Gun Violence Awareness Month. All right,
thank you, brother. All right, and we have Brother George in the queue. Brother George?
Brother Lou, I'm back. My head is spinning 99 miles an hour. There's 4 or 5 topics I want to cover real quick.
Take it from the top, brother.
with respect to insurance, my thought about that is that's more of an estate planning kind of thing, and I don't know. Well, here's 2 things that really popped in my mind. As an organization, maybe that's something because of the nature of the organization. You could offer that to the association members, and the association members, obviously, maybe they buy insurance and get a membership with their purchase of insurance. There's a bunch of different ways to do that. I don't know the current laws regarding life insurance as it relates to buying across state lines, because I know that's an issue with the Obamacare, Trump care, health care issue. Is that one of those things that will reduce the premiums if they offer, which seems kind of crazy that you can't buy. I live in California and Ohio, and I can't buy insurance in New York or can't buy from a New York company. And, you know, obviously the insurance thing is kind of a very educated scam. So maybe in the future, maybe that can be addressed as somebody, if they want to take the initiative to write a white paper on what it might mean that if the organization offers insurance and through the organization you get insurance from North Carolina Mutual or Atlanta, the other company that you mentioned. But again, that for me, I did it as I was becoming a more educated entrepreneur. I did it as part of my estate plan for my children, that I would have a burial plot, insurance to cover my burial, and insurance that they would get upon my death. And so anybody that sits down with a financial planner or estate planner, or even the banks even offer these kind of commodities now as part of their services. And so certainly we would want to do it through a black company, and I'm sure there's a way to arrange that. But I think you might be able to do it through an association with your group. So, and that's something you can table and talk about, and somebody else can add to that. The other thoughts that I had, one being, I don't know if you guys remember IGA. IGA stood for Independent Grocers Association.
Yep,
and as my brain was working here, I was thinking that with technology and everything we have in place, is there a way to identify? And I'm 57. I'm single, so I'm not a big grocery store kind of guy. But is there a way to identify what are the tenets that are important to black consumers, and can we use that from the organizational standpoint and identify across the country identify grocery stores that will adhere to those tenets, and as a result of that, they get a star in their front lobby or in their window or something. There's a good seal, you know, some kind of certificate or something that represents that they have our interests in mind. In other words, they're not going to run the price up, even though they have a neighborhood location. They're not going to charge. We understand they're in business for profit, so I don't have no problem with that. But they're not going to overcharge. They're going to be hiring young black kids.
Yeah, we had something like that. We spoke about something like that a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and so there could be an association. In addition, they could actually pay, because I think as an organization, there needs to be several streams of revenue. One could be that by virtue of this getting this, they pay $50 a year, $100 a year, whatever that magic number is. But that is something that I think that could possibly be interesting, in that I don't go to, I hate to say it this way, I don't really go to neighborhood stores. So I know that some of the stores are taken over by Middle Eastern people. And like you said, they'll sleep in the back. And I know our culture doesn't really relate to that kind of thing. So maybe they're there to stay, and we just have to try to figure out how to work with them. But they need to understand what we are and who we are and what we are expecting. I use Ralph's and one other kind of grocery store out west, but I'm not a good example of somebody that would, you know, be a test person to figure out what's good and what's bad in the grocery system, because I just, you know, go to the closest store and do it that way. So the bigger issue for me is this whole thing of education. So let me spend a couple minutes just kind of laying the groundwork of where I see things and try to offer a potential way that we could pursue some things that might be helpful. So whoever's in the government, and it could be a black president, a white president, Democrat, Republican, whatever, our economy is a matured economy. We're a capitalistic, a market-based economy, so you have to have people to fill the jobs in the lower segment of our population, right? So is my belief, and I'm not a big conspiracy theory kind of guy, but I really study certain things, and this seems to kind of stink out in my mind, that the educational system, they always talk about cutting education department's budget and all that kind of stuff, and I think that's done with the intent to make sure there's always going to be people to clean toilets, to sweep and mop floors, and those kind of things. And so the education, I think, is in the country. The market itself, the economy, all requires people that have a lesser education. And unfortunately, a disproportionate amount of those people are our people. So we have to figure out two things. One is how do you close that circle immediately? And two, how do you educate those people properly so that they can be qualified to fill tech jobs? Because there's a bunch of tech jobs around the world, not just in the United States, but we don't have the people. Like, you know, the president keeps saying that he's going to bring back jobs to the United States. It's impossible, because, one, you're going to lose jobs to technology. You're going to lose jobs to overseas manufacturing just because it's simply cheaper. And three, robots and just the idea of a company being able to operate more efficiently with less people. That's the reality in which we live in. So anybody saying they're bringing jobs back to the United States is telling a flat lie. And so we have to figure out how, as an example, let me say this. I watch National Geographic quite a bit, and I'm entertained by the animal interaction, things like that. In one of the shows, I saw the lions watch the water buffalo, and the water buffalo will parade along, and the ones that are older and ill and injured end up at the back of the pack. The lions are smart enough to know that, and they wait till the pack goes by, and then they attack the ones at the back. That's a relatively smart strategy. And so it dawns on me that our country, our economy, and the racism that is systematic in it does the same thing to us. It allows us to be less educated because we don't value ourselves because we're not educated. If you educate yourself and you can do it. And I know there's some other issues that relate to it, but you can do education for free. There's books, there's libraries, there's the internet, there's all kind of things that you can get access to, and we just need to guide our people there because if you educate yourself, you have a better understanding of self-worth, you have a better understanding of the world and how the world operates, and all those things that are listed, I think, in one of the surveys I took in getting to this point was the mass car and all of those things, to me, could be possibly impacted by education. So part of our mission and the mission of everybody on the call and anybody that is in close proximity to the people who are on the call should use education as the foundation for any movement addressing poverty, addressing mass incarceration, and addressing supporting certain grocery stores, buying insurance. All of that is based on education. My education came, I grew up in an inner city. I had what you call a stay-at-home mom. My father worked a job and a half a job and played sports, went to school, went to college. And it, even though my parents didn't go to college, they wanted to make sure that I went to college. And so the educational part is so critical in everything. The wage you make, what you buy, all those things. What the people on the call, they're primarily educated people because they found that those are the things that, one, they can be motivated by. This is a motivation a thing to be able to give back. And two, that they understand the critical problems that they've, you know, left behind, or at least they can see. And so the only way to not the only way, but the most important way to me, again, this is opinion-based, is addressing overall education. And I'll leave the floor to someone else.
Okay. if anyone wants to weigh in regards to the education, press star 6. I'll be honest with you. I don't have too much good to say in regards to that. Because I just think people are just the way they are. I was a nerd in school. You know what I mean? I got skipped twice. I was a knucklehead still. But, reading, just academic things came to me easily. And I realized that that does not come easily to other people. And what happens is my mother was an educator. My mother was a teacher. But she worked two jobs. She didn't really do that. But in my household, we spoke proper English. In my household, if you say a word or you hear something and you didn't know what it was, I was told to go look it up.
Right.
Punishment for me was writing paragraphs and book reports, or even watching a show and then writing basically the summary, the plot and the summary, and you know, what did I think of it? And, you know, we sit at the dinner table and then, you know, there's like my mother would just throw something out random and like, what does that mean based on what I said? And then like, how would I find that? And we're like, we got to use the context clues. Like we're kids, like that was part of our grooming in my household.
Absolutely.
You're not, there is the education, the things that are happening in our community at home, these things aren't being reinforced. So that's not – so the only – as far as I'm concerned right now, unless we just focus on the babies, but in terms of what's going on, in terms of, like, let's say, like, the teenagers and things like that now, they just have to naturally be gifted. They have to already have the desire, I think, to learn. One of the biggest things, I don't work in schools. I don't know anything about the school system now. But the biggest thing when I went to school is they taught you how to learn, right? So it wasn't so much just read what we tell you to read. It's like we're going to give you this tool. This is how you research things. This is how you learn. Now, hey, I'm going to give you something. It's not going to tell you directly what it is, but I'm going to give you a test. and I want you to answer these questions. You're supposed to draw an inference. That's how you learn. That was all the classes that I was in. The answers were never, or rarely, let me just say, very rarely was the answer directly in the book. You had to figure it out. I don't know if they're teaching that same way in school. I also know that with all the distractions, technology, and so much stimuli, I know that these kids these days are not learning the same way. It's just way too much going on. So, I don't have high hopes for reaching, like, the teenagers and trying to change somebody's mind. Their parents. Their parents aren't interested. I get texts from all kinds of family members in calls, like, around that 4, 5, 6 o'clock time. Everyone's calling, hey, such and such got this home from school. I'm just trying to help. I mean, got this for homework. I'm trying to help them. What the hell are they talking about? I'm getting this all across the board. There's all kinds. And sometimes my kids get homework that I got to be like, wait a minute, man, let me push my glasses up. Let me see, what the hell are they talking about? You understand what I'm saying? So, I think what we need more than anything is a revision of the culture. We need a cultural revision. And in regards to your point in terms of, like, the wages and this, that, and third, and the low-level work, the Mexicans are able to make I didn't know people were still working for $2, $3, and $5 an hour. The Mexicans are doing that. They're working for $5 an hour, $2 an hour in these fields and all this crazy stuff, and they're sending back $25 billion a year to Mexico. That means that they are spending money to live here, stay here in America, whether that means they're sleeping 4, 5, 6 in a room or whatever, I don't know. But no matter what's going on here, they are able to send back $25 billion a year. They send back the most amount of money from South America. And we all know they are not getting paid top dollar. So I personally just don't feel that – I don't think that that's an excuse. I do agree with you in regards to you have to have some people to do the low-level work. It is what it is. And that's why I said I like the idea that mechanic told me in terms of sifting and sorting people, finding out where they are. If this person doesn't have the aptitude for academia, put him in, let him work with his hands. We're going to have to just get to that point. I mean, like, we're going to have to start calling a spade and stop being emotional and politically correct. Black people don't have that luxury. We don't have the luxury of none of that stuff. We got to start playing hardball. But the only way we're going to do that is if we're able to put food on people's tables. You can't tell somebody what to do and you ain't putting no food on the table. That's the bottom line. I mean, that's in my experience. But when you're giving somebody a job, you can pretty much have some influence. That's just my experience. We have a few more people. We have Sister Bonnie and Sister Rhonda in the queue. Anything else you want to add in summary, or if anything, you can just come back in the queue.
I can just come back later on.
All right, brother. Okay. Sister Bonnie. Yes. Sister Bonnie?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I just have a comment. I agree. I kind of agree with both of you. My mom was a teacher, too. So I know what you're talking about. Yeah, we had to speak proper English and all of that. But the one thing that a lot of parents don't understand is over the years, from the time I was a kid to when you were a kid to when my grandkids were coming up and in school and high school, a lot of things changed in the educational system. And some of this stuff, I get this too a lot. Nana, can you help me with this? I ain't got a clue as to what they're talking about because they have made everything so absolutely complicated till it's almost impossible for some of these kids to learn this stuff. So I'm in agreement with you on that because some of that stuff is like, what the heck is this? And they want you to do what? And okay, and you start showing them the way You know.
You learned it.
And no, that's not right.
Yep. They got them doing something now where they're supposed to take groups and this and this. I told my kids, listen, you go get you a piece of paper, you go get you a pencil, and you start drawing sticks. Can't go wrong like that. Start marking it off. Until I started teaching my kids multiplication when they were like 3 and 4. Sit here, you're going to go and you're going to start with sticks. Oh, but they want us to group. I don't know nothing about grouping. I don't know. If you talk about grouping them by fives and crossing them off, taking four sticks, crossing off with a five, that's the only grouping I know. But
right.
Yeah, you're 100% right.
And I think it's designed primarily to keep our kids, the Hispanic and Latino kids, you know, all the minority kids down, and they're helping their kids to get this because they're learning it themselves, but we have no way of knowing what the hell they're talking about.
Well, I mean, in my community, right? I'm with like working class white folks, maybe like upper middle class white folks or whatever. So they're not the brightest people. Like, the thing about white people, and I mean, I actually love this about white people. White people have no shame. They have no filter. When they don't know, they say they don't know. But what they're great at going to get help. They're great at going to find somebody who knows. These
right.
people like, oh, they're doing all this craziness. I'm like, you know, so I talked to my neighbor. He was like, yeah, you know, and I don't know what the hell they're talking about with this crazy new math. And this and that. I was like, yeah, man, I had to Google some things and figure out how they want to do it. Man, I didn't even mess around with that nonsense. I took them over there to the K-12 this one over here is called Mathnasium, but they had like I think the other one is Hunter something or whatever. They in a heartbeat will send their kids to the extracurricular math tutor place.
Yeah,
in a heartbeat they would do it. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. They're doing math all crazy now. I don't know. I figure those eggheads over there know what they're doing and help this guy pass the thing. And that's what they do. And that's what we need to be doing. But
exactly.
I understand.
And it's not just math. It's not just math. I've seen it with science.
Well, anything math. So I'm lucky. I don't know if it's luck, but my area for my kids is it's a STEM-based. This is a STEM-based academic syllabus that they have. STEM is the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So it's heavy here. And our kids don't necessarily get that in other areas. So because we have one of the main engineering schools in Jersey here. And so they're funneling all these kids into like those types of jobs with technology and science and this and that. I love it personally. And they accept no excuses, and it doesn't matter if your kid is black or whatever. So, you know, one of the other neighbors that I know, so her son was falling behind. They didn't, like, discard the dude. They gave her, hey, this is what he needs to do to catch up. And he didn't catch up, and they sent him to another school. But even still in that school, they're still giving him the same thing. They're just giving it to him at a slower pace. But their intention is, we're funneling your ass to this science school. That's what it is. And when you get to that point, when you graduate from what I know, like I had two older kids that graduated here, they give you the option to go to ROTC, and I guess that's like some kind of army thing. They give you the option to go to the vocational school, or you're going to that science school. Unless you're going to leave out of state. So, I mean, those are just some of the things, man, that, you know, I just think that people, you know, you just can't accept excuses anymore.
You can't.
That's just what it is.
You
yeah,
can't.
So.
And I know with these kids here, I don't accept it. And my daughter doesn't accept it. We just do not accept the excuses. You have to learn
you got to live somehow because, you know, the bottom line is I'm not going to be here always to help you. I'm not going to be here always to do for you, and I'm not going to try to. You need to learn how to do for yourself. And this is how, now this is how I was raised, and this is how my kids was raised, and this is how my grandkids are being raised.
Right, but well, it's going to be hard.
Right back in their court. No, you will learn that.
It's going to be hard to impress that upon everyone all across the you know, all across, you know, America, you know, the black community. I just think that's just too hard. Because
I agree. It's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. We can't impress that on everybody. But like you said, you know, in every culture, some people have to do the menial jobs that maybe they don't like it, but they learn to do that, then maybe they can learn to do something else. And then once they get started into those jobs, then they'll start trying, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them will start trying to do something else and do better.
Right. All right. We have Sister Rhonda and Brother Kareem in the queue. Is there anything else you want to add in summary?
Nope, I'm all done.
Okay. Sister Rhonda and then Brother Kareem. Hello?
Yes. I'm in agreement with Sister Bonnie, yourself, and Brother George, because I was raised the same way. If you didn't, don't speak about something that you don't know about. If you don't know a word, you go look it up, you get the definition. And that's how I raised my children also. We are at some kind of crossroads in this country, like you said, Brother Lou, just a few seconds ago. This country is just not relegated to one state as far as our community is concerned. We have been educated differently all over, and it's showing all kind of craziness going on right about now. But we cannot, as it's been stated, accept no excuses and take no wooden nickels because we're running behind the eight ball. We're running behind the eight ball, and it's too late, so you better jump on the wagon now and get with the program. And everything that you said, Brother Lou, Brother George, Sister Bonita, is correct. Something happened here that really tore this, and I don't want to get political or nothing, and I'm not, but I heard you in the beginning. But
no, if it's how it affected us, if it's how it affected us, that's cool.
They put drugs in our community, it impacted some of our people, a lot of our people. You know. People were running here and there trying to find a niche in society. Or I'm going to go there and live and see if I can make it with my children and my family over there. And come to find out the same thing is happening over there. So you try to pull yourself up and not get involved in that to keep your family from being involved in that. And it's just rampant. But I'm in agreement, Brother Lou. Sister Bonnie and Brother George, if you're still there, it just has to stop. The root is education, but how do we go about getting it? And I'm just in agreement with you just got to get up and do it. You got to get up and do it. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it because nobody lives forever. That's a given.
Yeah, I agree. Anything else you want to add in summary? I mean, you summed it up. Yeah, you summed it up beautifully. Yeah, you're right. You're going to have to just get in there somewhere. I think getting in there with the kids, I think getting there with the babies, they're not too fresh, right? Because that's the other thing. I can't stand fresh little kids. They're not too fresh. They're manageable. They're physically manageable, right? So there's a lot of, I don't know if you guys seen this thing, but there were some young guys from Philly who punched mentally disabled guy in the face. And then, you know, they locked the guys up, but then they were following up on the story. And those same guys were one of them. Yeah, he beat up his principal. He beat, yo, I would have never thought to friggin' hit my principal back in the day. This dude, yeah, they beat up the principal. So when So when you see situations like that, we're going to have to – that's why I said we need the babies, and then we need a code of conduct. And we're really going to have to sit down, and we're going to have to speak to the employees, right? But they're actually members. They would be members. And we would have to tell them, like, listen, you have to understand that things are out of control in our community. And one of the main things is there's a lack of discipline, and there's a lack of guidance. And so – this, you know, part of this job, if you're going to be working XYZ amount of hours, you're going to be doing this. We want to, you know, we want your child to become a part of this. And martial arts and physical things like that, and sports and things, those things instill great discipline. They're great team building and discipline building exercises. And we would definitely have some kind of physical training, martial arts or whatever, because what happens is, whoever is like the sensei or the whoever it is, that guy usually plays a role in terms of the discipline, and he would wind up implementing some kind of punishment or chest punches or whatever it is. I don't know, you know. So those are the kind of, we're gonna have to have some real tough talk with our people, man. It's gonna have to, like, that's the only way we're gonna pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, and we have to. So Sister Kyoga, she said that we have to, like, make it cool. If we have people and we're giving them jobs, right, they're going to be a part of – they're going to want to be a part of this. And then when they can no longer be a part of this, when they can no longer make money or whatever it is, and then they see, let's say, like, their neighbor is flourishing, they're doing good and whatever else, then they'll definitely want to be a part of it, you know, so – Sister Kyoko, I want you to get back in the queue. I want to briefly touch on that. I got Brother Kareem in the queue, and I want to briefly touch on the thing that you mentioned, and then I want to summarize. I want to sum it up because I think we've been on about 2 hours now, close to 2 hours. This is a good one. I told the guests, this is usually what happens. We get on a call. These calls get so engrossing. They become so interesting, and we've been on 5 hours before, so I'm just letting you guys know. Yeah, so just trying to be respectful of you guys. What we usually do is we wrap up, but then we have, like, a freestyle, so anyone you still want to be on, things you still want to discuss or touch on, then we just do that, and we basically stay on until everyone is satisfied. So, sister, so I want to get to Brother Kareem. You have anything you want to add in summary? Hello? Oh, okay, I guess not. All right, Brother Kareem.
All right, I heard a lot of interesting things. As far as the youth, we got to remember, too, like, kids are raising kids right now. What crack did, crack took mothers and fathers out of the household. So now, right now, we're dealing with the repercussion of that. So kids right now are being raised by children themselves. Their mothers and their fathers are conducting the same activities that the children are doing. They're caught up in the social media just like the kids. The parents, the father's pants are sagging just like the kids. And like Sister said, it's a culture. Right? And it's not like this in just New York City. It's like this through America. Every inner city is going through the same thing. You know, so the like Brother Lou said, it's about addressing the culture, and it's about knowing what's going on with our kids, because we can sit here and debate, but the reality of it is that children are raising children, so the parents don't know. Just like my parents didn't know financial literature when I was a child, so they didn't know how to tell me to, you know, invest in stocks like my counterparts were doing. They didn't know how to do them things, but they provided things that they felt was for me. These kids today are not being provided that. They'll be being provided with just the Jordan, just the material things of everything. This is why the education is lacking, because their parents
don't know education, you know, and now the school is adjusting to this thing called Common Core, and it's taking and giving them a new way of learning, and they haven't even came abreast to the old way of learning. You know what I'm saying? So they haven't even come abreast to the old way of learning, and now they're throwing this new curve at this Common Core, and that's just completely complicated, and this is why this is why everybody's having trouble with their kids' homework, you know, because now they're trying to teach them a new thing, and it's confusing. All right, that's it, brother. I have to run real quick. I'm sorry.
All right, thank you, Brother Kareem. All right, have a good one. Sister Kiyoka, are you doing?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So, to your point in terms of making it cool, trying to make this movement, this organization, you know, hip or whatever it is, we had previous conversations in regards to this. But one of the things that we're thinking, so we were talking about trying to reach some celebrity influencers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the main things is to use the, you know, I mean, this is my thing. If we know the culture, if we know that they want to engage in like this negative behavior and all of this thing, I believe that we can use that to our benefit, because I think people are getting disgusted with it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's because it's so much right now, and we need something to. So like Brother George said, like Finn Lou Hamer said, they got to be sick and tired of being sick and tired. Because now that's what I'm seeing a lot now. So I see a lot of people that posting these fights, and then there's a lot of people like, oh, come on, not this again. You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't know by posting it or commenting on it that increases the virality of it. But I'm just saying that's just what it is. So we have discussed ways to try to make this movement, you know, more palatable, more entertaining or engaging. But it's always been that way. Trying to speak positivity, trying to, especially on social media, it's like, you know, crickets. You're going to
mm-hmm.
be crickets. Same thing like you said. So, you know, I just wanted to address that, you know, let you know that we have been trying some of those things. We were discussing hardcore recruiting tactics. We were discussing all different types of things. I personally think it's the shopping. I think that
mm-hmm.
we're going to be able to use people because the bottom line is everyone loves to shop.
Yeah.
That's what we do. And I think if we're able to use that and then be able to reach more, find more like-minded brothers and sisters, then that will allow it to grow. So each week we have new members coming on, right? So we're reaching out. I don't know how long ago you signed up, you know, for the email. I don't know how long you've been receiving, you know, notifications. But each week we have new guests come on, so it spreads and it builds upon itself.
Mm-hmm.
And all week long, you know, I work hard to try to promote this and get this thing, you know, in as many corners or as in front of as many people as possible, you know, on social media. But and we reach thousands, right? So we reach thousands each week. But, you know, you may have, you know, 20, 30 people come on the call, 40 people come on the call. So those types of numbers are dismal. But it's, you know, sometimes it's people, you know, they can't get off with the work or whatever. But a lot of people, they say that they are interested, but they're really not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another hurdle. That's even after we've been really blatant, we've been really direct in regards to what this organization is about and what we're trying to do. And even still, like, so like, you know, and you obviously came through the survey or whatever, through the survey too. We ask specifically, hey, do you want to work with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters? Yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
If you say no, you will not be here. There's no way for you to get an email. There's no need for you to get a notification or anything. We
mm-hmm.
have like 1,000-some-odd people that receive our messages, but they don't connect. So that's
mm-hmm.
another thing that we need to, you know, that's a whole other aspect. And,
well, can I first just apologize because I did reach out to you a while ago, but I have some personal issues why I haven't been able to focus on it. But when I check my email today, I'm like, oh, my God, I got to get focused back on this. So I'm one of those people that I reached out to, but I didn't have the time to dedicate, you know, when I initially spoke to you. But now, you know, I'm pretty much ready. And I'm glad this email I got today told me about the meeting so I can kind of listen out and really see, you know, more in depth and then hear some of the other people that's, you know, already part of the organization. Because I did discuss it when I first heard about y'all, I was like really excited. And then when I talked to that first time, I was even more excited. And I talked to my fiance and he was really interested too, but, you know, we're very busy. And his primary concern was, you know, yeah, he feels okay with me, you know, joining, but he just wants to make sure that, you know, and I'm not saying you or anything like that, but he just doesn't want me to join anything and then my money is being taken advantage of. So, like, for example, I know that you're still looking for, like, 2,000 people or more people to join, as many people as we can join, but let's say we're, you know, contributing. At what point do we come to a meeting to say, okay, we came up with this amount, so this is what we're going to do next? Like, is that something that happens in the town meetings?
Well, it's outlined in the blueprint. So what happens is we build the platform. That's where we are right now. So right now, what's happening? The members that are on, that's really the members and I, we discussed this thing. But you know, real full transparency, our outreach efforts. The membership fees are like not even covering that. So I'm coming out of my pocket to basically make all of this happen, right? So all the software, everything that's going on, it's being, you know, so we have membership dues, but I'm subsidizing the shortfall. So we're not there yet. The development of the platform and things like that, it's anywhere from, so one part of it is like about 25,000-30,000. Another part of it could be 65,000, depending on, so I've spoken with, you know, a few members in detail in regards to what this thing needs to be. It's technical, but it's, you know, not for the user. It's to make things really easy. And so we have to be able to make that work across mobile devices, and that's proven to be the most challenging part, because 80-something% of our brothers and sisters that interact with the site interact with it through mobile, you know. And so we have to be able to make sure that the portal has a mobile component. We have to have a mobile component, and that's going to be the most expensive part. So.
And I just have a few things that I kind of just wanted to say, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. When I was a kid, my aunt had a program that she was doing with the inner city kids. And maybe we can, even though we don't have a lot of people, and I do definitely plan on becoming a member, but maybe if we don't have a lot of people right now, maybe we can do something like less expensive. Like when I was a kid, there was a program called Roots Revisited. And what they did was like a weekend trip. They took like a lot of the kids from like the inner city and basically just taught them about like Black pride, you know, talk to you about your heritage, things of that nature. Even if we can't really afford to take kids away somewhere, even if it's just like to a local park and have a barbecue and talk, or even, you know, how they always have block parties all over the city all the time. You know what I mean? Maybe during a block party, you know, get on an announcement, just like see what kind of jogs people, you know, emotions. It doesn't necessarily have to be so expensive at times. Cause like I said, I think sometimes if we make things fun, it gets Black people's attention more than just like hitting them with knowledge right away. You know what I mean? Because it seems like sometimes you hit people with knowledge, they get scared and they want to run. You know what I mean? So I just feel like if we could kind of get our minds together to kind of think more of on a basic level, because it seems like we're kind of above a lot of people's heads, so they're not really reaching for where we're at. So we kind of really got to get down to some of these people's level. People want to go to the club every weekend. People want to go to the strip clubs. People want to, you know, this is what our people are doing now. You know what I mean? This is what they call fun. So, like, we kind of got to get down to that raw level, you know, with them. And I don't know, like, so if we can all maybe put our minds together to see how we can reach people in a fun way. So maybe, and then, like you said, get them on board in those aspects. Like if you could spend money at the club, then you could give us $10. You know, even if we can do like a one-time hit where people can, we can get people to like maybe donate a dollar here at a fun, like at a block party or something like that. You know, I just think we have to probably do it on like the most minor level right now, because I feel like a lot of us are really lost and everybody's just following like the wrong trends, and somehow we're just trying to like got to reel them back in.
That's excellent, the block party and things like that. So about, I don't know, maybe two or three town halls. Actually, it was actually a few. So we were discussing things like that. Two town hall meetings ago, we were discussing a mentorship program, which mm-hmm. wouldn't really require money. It would just require organization.
Mm-hmm.
I am like Brother George, though. I am a capitalist. I am a greedy capitalist. I want to do something that's going to leverage and that's going to create some type of effect, but also create some financial leverage. That's mm-hmm. because of my own personal experience, though, with the black community, right? So mm-hmm. I have already tried to single-handedly, well, actually twice, I tried to single-handedly like save people, like say, and not like, you know, little, not on a small scale, on a big scale. I tried to really like come in and try to like save like 15 families, that type of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and like a whole community, like pick the whole section of a community and was like, don't worry, y'all, I got y'all. That didn't turn out well.
Oh.
So, right? So when I said to the brother that it needs to be profitable to invest in the, you know, in the future or the betterment of the black community and things like that, I mean that wholeheartedly. I have nothing against members getting together, because we have a lot of sisters here, and I know you guys are so loving and caring, and if you guys want to organize and do, I have no problem putting that or helping with the thing. But me personally, my brain isn't there, because
mm-hmm.
I believe we would go, we would do such a thing, we would do it. People would come up, they would eat up all our free stuff, they would take advantage of all our free stuff.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, but that's just my personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then speaking with the brother earlier, so like he said, he went and put his business on the line, right? So he has white partners, he has other, you know, he has other partners that have other ethnicities, and he went out down to their city hall or whatever it was and like, you know, basically banged on the podium and was like, I'm black unapologetically. You know what I'm saying? So I'm more into doing things that I know would help our brothers and sisters, but that I know would give us a point of leverage as well. Right. So if we were to go and we create these businesses, right. So mm-hmm. like the brother said, first and foremost, we have to turn a profit. My other obligation, you know, so I believe in that if you provide a nice wage or whatever it is to the employees, then you would be able to squeeze out efficiencies and productivities and other different things that may not be measured directly and like right on the bottom line, but the morale and other things, right? So that's the way like how I manage my current business. I have a very good relationship with my employees. It's like, but you know, the bottom line is the bottom line. But there are little things that happen that, you know, are unforeseen. They take care of it because of the type of relationship that I have with them. Right. So those are intangibles. And so I believe when you're doing things like that, you're able to get the best out of people and not feel like you're being taken advantage of or being jerked. Our people will take advantage of you. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Right.
So, yeah, you come to them and say, hey, I want to help. They'll be like, oh, yeah, and they will take every single bit of help that you have and bleed you dry. And I had to learn this the hard way.
No, you're not wrong. You're definitely right.
Yes, yes. But I love the idea. We could, I shared with a brother earlier, if we were to have like a fair or some type of organization or whatever it is, we could definitely sell them stuff though, right? So it's like we're doing it for the community. We can pick something that we want to contribute. Maybe we're like, all right, we'll give a bouncy house. So you can jump on a bouncy house for free, but you got to buy these waters and you got to buy these hot dogs or something like that.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, that's how I'm. So But sister, yes, definitely become a member. All our guests, all of our guests, if you like what you're hearing, we do this every week. We would like to extend the invitation to every you guys. I'm not gonna lie, you guys have been a really great group of guests. You guys have been really active, really open and participating, and you guys sound like you've been here, right? So you sound like our members. You guys are talking like our members. I want to extend an invitation for you guys to watch the blueprint and, okay. And if it makes sense or whatever, then, definitely become a member. I'll follow up with you later on, Brother George, especially you. I'll text you in a few minutes, give you my direct number. Sister, I believe you have my number because I remember I think you and your fiance called me at a time.
Yeah,
or was it
an
email?
You emailed me, then we talked, but then I had some personal issues and I haven't been online for a while, so I got lucky today. But are your meetings predominantly on the same day during the week so that I know to look for the email at a certain day?
Thursdays. Okay. At 9, right, so this is the number. So Thursdays at 9, Thursdays at 9 p.m., hop on,
okay.
Right here.
All right,
But I do send out notifications, all right?
Okay.
And, okay, sister, so let me close that out. We did not get to the second topic. It is 11:21. This was a good one. Sister Bonnie, I guess we could revisit the age thing. I want to research that a little bit myself, too. I'm going to end this, and I think this call, we can call this one a wrap. Hold on for a minute. Let me clear and unmute the microphones. I want to get feedback from our guests as well. Okay, Sister Kioka. Let's see, Brother Kareem, you're not a guest. Brother George, you're a guest. Sisters, all right, Sister Charmaine, Brother Jay, you guys aren't guests. Brother Rome, Sister Ty. Hello, Brother Rome? Okay, they were here last week. I don't know.
Sorry, we're here.
Oh, you guys are here. Okay. So we want to get in Sister Rhonda. Okay, Sister Rhonda. So I just want to get some feedback from our guests. So Sister Kioka, you kind of like chimed in and pretty much like, so how do you feel? What do you think about this particular town hall and the vibe and whatever, you just want some feedback so we know what to do next time, improve or keep it the same or whatever. Hello, Sister Kioka?
You talking to me?
Yeah, I was just trying to get your feedback on the town hall on this meeting because we're going to close it out right now.
Oh, I thought it was really good, and I really thought it was informative, and I liked everybody's input, actually, and what they were saying, and a lot of stuff that they were saying was stuff that I was thinking about, so I'm kind of glad that I listened on today.
Okay, thank you. All right. Brother Rome, Sister Ty, this is your second week. Welcome back. You guys have any feedback?
Yes, I know Rome does. Give me 1 second. There you go.
Hello.
Peace, brother.
Peace, family.
Yeah, so you have any feedback for us this week? What did you think about this week's town hall, brother?
Oh, man, I'm really impressed. I mean, you guys, it was very informative. You guys got a lot of information. That it feels like it's a little bit more shored up now. I see the vision. I see where it's going. I would just like to see, some steam going. That's all. But I'm excited and willing to get in there and work.
Okay, excellent, brother. And I saw you posting in the group too, man. So I appreciate that, and you added a few people too, bro. So I appreciate you being active on that end.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right, Sister Rhonda.
Yes.
How you doing?
Okay. I mean, it was great my first time here. I mean, I can't say enough. I mean, you touched on little bit of everything. And the main thing is that we as a people have to stop wanting to get a free ride all the time. And we just got to stop making excuses not to do what we can do for ourselves and stop letting other people do for us. And I really appreciated this call. I'm glad I listened in, because everybody, especially Brother George, he was on it, because we are not living in isolated anymore. We all over the world now, and in order for us to be competitive, we're going to have to step the game up.
Yep, I agree. All right, so did you get a chance to watch the blueprint?
No, I am. I just looked at the post, and I was so excited that I said, well, let me call, and that's why I emailed you for the number and everything, but I'm going to read it.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, so you can go on the site and click where it says blueprint. And, I mean, if it resonates with you, sister, man, we hope you can join us.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you feeling, brother? Okay.
Fantastic.
So a little, do you have any feedback, any comments, or final remarks or anything? I know you really enjoyed the participation. I mean, you really got in there today. We appreciate you for that.
I'm extremely excited. I'm going to read the blueprint. I travel quite a bit, but I am available if I'm going to become a member. No question about that. Whatever support that you need to help carry the mission forward, any kind of like I said, as you said earlier, you are, as I am, a entrepreneur and a business person, and so I'm energized by anything that relates to that, and especially as it relates to helping our people. I look forward to I created a half-day program and a full-day program about educating young black kids and, you know, teenagers or whatever, for entrepreneurship, and that's something that maybe we can look at down the line. I actually put together a program, and it was primarily for inner-city schools in Ohio. The reason I originally did it, I was a Church's Chicken franchisee at the time, and I was had a bunch of stores in Ohio, and so I did it for the purpose of trying to teach entrepreneurship, because I think, in my humble opinion, I think that's the way you create jobs, you create wealth, and you do all that. If we're selling stuff to ourselves, and I don't want to get off on a tangent again, but that is one of the primary focuses that I have. And so as a result of that, I'm now affiliated, understand, I'll read the blueprint, I'll become a member, and offer whatever knowledge that I have stored up over these last 30 years of business.
Excellent, brother. I mean, yeah, I really look forward to having further conversations with you, because so your experience in terms of operating a food service business, it's a very lucrative industry, but it's also very risky. But, you know, with someone who knows how to captain the ship in regards to that, and, you know, what pitfalls to look out for, I mean, brother, I think you would be, you know, an invaluable asset, especially if that's something that we could teach, right? Because a lot of our brothers and sisters, so aside from a barbershop, beauty salon, the other business that they usually go and operate is like some kind of restaurant, some kind of food business. And
right.
Maybe there are some things that they're missing. I know for one, the structure of a franchise, and I'm, you know, I'm guilty of this as well. The way that I run my own, the way I run my own business is more or less from the hip. Like, you know, I've been doing it for like 20 years, so
right.
You know, we've developed our own system, but I know when you have, you know, a structured business template that we could go and we could teach, and we can get entrepreneurs in there, and we could say, hey, listen, brother, you can go and you could have this type of business, especially food business, especially retail. Brother Ron, he left the call, he had to get up in the morning. But Brother Ron also was in retail, and he has that experience. Those are some of the skills that we could teach our brothers and sisters that live in the hood, that live in these cities, and then they could go and now they have the skill set and the wherewithal to replace the Asians and the Arabs and all of this, right? Because the biggest stores that are in our neighborhood are the corner stores and the beauty salon, the beauty supply
right.
stores and the nails, right? If we were able to implement some kind of training system, and then I don't even know if we would create like a national chain, and maybe that's something that we need to revisit, especially since we have a brother, you know, such as you with that knowledge. That would be something that the organization could actually go and invest in. We would train these people, give them, you know, do something like a rev share. They would actually be owner slash manager. We would retain part of the equity, part of ownership of it. You know, sort of like a franchise. And we would be able to allow them to come in. Obviously, they need to have some skin in the game. Some it could be like the training program. I don't know if churches does the same thing like McDonald's, but McDonald's has like that hamburger U. You
yep.
have to know how to do everything. It's
yep.
saying we could do the same thing, and now we would be growing our base, and I'm sure we can get investors based on it. So once we get some pro formas, we have some track record, we would be able to get tons and tons of investors behind that.
Well,
and
let me
again,
say, let me say this briefly to your point. Two things. One is that, ironically enough, I attended Hamburger U, so that's kind of funny that you brought that up. I was looking at the McDonald's system prior to. I went into the RB system and then ultimately into Church's Chicken, and Church's Chicken was brought out of bankruptcy and merged. It merged with Popeye's back in 93, I want to say, when I first became a franchisee. They were merged companies run by America's Favorite Chicken Company, and they were headquartered in Atlanta at the time. And like I said, I went from one store to 22 stores over about a six-year period, so we were growing pretty fast. The thing that the most interesting thing is that there are concepts around the country. I haven't done it in a while just because I've been, you know, as I've gotten a little older, I kind of a little more selfish with my time. So I play golf in Phoenix with my cousin. I go back and forth to Las Vegas and Los Angeles and back to Ohio, and I kind of live a pretty quiet life relative to. And that's why I really want to get involved in some organization to kind of give back all the benefits I've got from the blessings that I've received. But I will say this. There are a number of concepts around possibly your business, possibly somebody else's business that's on the call that we could look at franchising and use that model and say as an example, we can take a restaurant that's operating in Brooklyn or something, and take that. And basically, franchising is coming up with a standard procedure that you can use anywhere on the earth. So if you write a, which I've done before, write a standard operating manual, which all businesses have, what you do when you first come and turn on the lights, what do you turn on the fryers, what do you turn, you know, you count the money in the cash register, all those things are wrapped up in a standard operating manual. Once you create a manual for that business, you can basically franchise it. And so it would be interesting to see as the mix of people that are involved, the mix of people that are on calls and things like that, what their background is, what experience they have, or what business they have. And those can be used as models for, you know, the membership as well as black folks in general using them. Obviously, there's restaurants, there's I don't do the whole beauty shop thing. I understand it, but I think we have enough of that. It doesn't create generational wealth. What I would like to achieve, or at least talk about and look at, is generational wealth. That's what white folks. That's what the Jews. I don't want to be political, but the Jews that they look at now.
Oh, God, brother, God, God, brother, gay.
The Jews that they talk about now have created generational wealth, and they did that by, you know, some nefarious activities. But
talk about it. What do they do?
Well, the Jews that you see are the European Jews. They were given a lot. They stole a lot. They took a lot of wealth from the black countries of Northern Africa and things like that. And so as a result of that,
we've paraded these people around like they're the real Jews, and they're not. But they have an economic system that allows them to continue to empower themselves. They keep their issues of the Holocaust on the front page of everybody's newspaper. So we have not been able to duplicate that.
And I think we can use slavery. I have. So there's a segment. It was omitted from the blueprint that's there, but it was in the before I edited it, and there was a segment that I had in there which said that we need to model the Jews. I read this book called The Jewish Phenomenon, and this guy is in there basically giving it up. He's like, we know we're dominating everything with the money because that's our plan. We do that specifically. We teach that to our kids. We teach that to our converts. Like, we let them know that this is, so it's not just a religion, it is a culture, and the foundation of this thing is to be a good steward of your money. And I think that's what we need to, that needs to be instilled in our people. I know for me personally, not having all that I wanted was very, very real to me until I was able to have. And then I was able to say, okay, you know what? It doesn't matter. I don't need to go buy like the $900 jeans. I don't need this. I don't need that. I don't need to go in the club popping bottles. But I did that though. I lived it. I got it out of my system. And so I think it's going to be, I think trying to change the culture. So if you notice the Jews, especially the Orthodox, they are just drab. They, their bank account, as far as black people are concerned, it's like, all right, what's the purpose of having all that money if you don't have any fun with it?
And
I'm still kind of like in that mind too, right? So I think for black people, there's going to have to be a fine balance. When Sister Kiyoko was saying what she was saying, Brother Kareem texted me and said that maybe if it was like if it was a picture of like black people bawling out, but there was some balance and they were eating from positivity. They were eating from like this. I don't want to say conscious and woke movement because I mean the degrees of what consciousness and woke means with our brothers. Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought it meant one thing. I guess it doesn't. So maybe presenting something like that, some fine balance. I know one of the biggest things right now is everyone is enamored with this Black Wall Street thing and owning businesses and running businesses. I mean, I guess, I don't want
to. But everybody, as you know, you run
business. You're going to say, I knew you were going to say, yeah, I know how to do it. But we're going to help them. We're going to help them, though, brother.
It's not for everybody, man. I know. That I went to school with that laughed at me when I first got in. I got in business not long after college. I got in the dry cleaning business, and I was working. Pressing clothes at 6 a.m. in the morning while they were still sleeping. They would be laughing at me, and I would have a second job just so I could hurry up and pay off my loan so I could open up my second dry claim. See, the educational part is, and I hate to revisit this, but my parents, like, I wasn't really that shocked that we had Barack Obama. Now, I know that may sound crazy to you, but my parents never put a limit on what I could be. I just never simply was interested in being a president of the United States. I would want to be president of J.P. Morgan Chase or something else, but I never had an interest in being that. My parents never put a limitation on me. In fact, they encouraged that kind of thing. I was a kid. I cut grass. I delivered newspapers. I shoveled snow. So I think some people are better situated to be entrepreneurs because of their mindset. And so Malcolm X talked about some people have to be left behind because the movement, whatever the movement manifests itself into, has some victims that lay on the side of the road as the movement goes down the road. So part of our responsibility will be to say, okay, well, this person, I don't want you to try to open up
a Hilton hotel if you worked at Motel 6 and you only saved up $6,000, because it's not realistic. You know what I mean? We can figure out how to find one of them hotels around the corner, and you can own that, and then from there you own that, and then open up another one, and open up another, and then you can sell all those and buy the Hilton Hotel in downtown Manhattan or something. But there has to be a understanding of my granddaughter always talks about this stay in your lane thing. It's funny, she's only 8 and she don't really know what it means, but it's funny because it is absolutely apropos when we talk about some of the things we're going to have to go down the path of. We got to stay in your lane. I mean, if you want to be this or that, you know, we just got to work on helping them achieve that. And some people might be left behind, unfortunately.
Left behind, yeah. I mean, I don't want to keep – I mean, so everyone's probably on the call like, you know, these two guys have like a bromance, right? So finish up this call, take it off. You know, so like I said, usually what we do is we talk behind the scenes, or if anyone wants to stay on, they can stay on. But I think this was a very good town hall, and I want to conclude it, and I want to thank everyone for coming on, especially the guests. And hopefully you guys would, you know, watch the blueprint. If it makes sense, you know, we would love to have you guys as members. We are looking for founding members. So as a founding member, you would have input in shaping and creating this movement, this organization. So the sister had a great idea in terms of maybe doing like a block party or that. So that's kind of sort of in line with like maybe a fundraiser type thing. I really don't want to get into like we're begging for money. I rather just operate some kind of business, operate something that's benefiting the community, but we're still generating the money that we need. So,
can I interrupt you, Brother Lou, for one quick second?
Sure.
I will throw this out here, and so it's something that maybe we can look at. Whatever a founding sponsor, I'll look on the line, but I would like to become a founding sponsor. What I would suggest, wherever, I know you're in New York, and I've by virtue of me being California, I'm kind of a junior movie investor. So what I would say is that there are some products that will be coming out in the not-too-distant future, documentaries and such, and if there's someone in way in New York that maybe you could host, or somebody could host a preview, a private VIP viewing, mm-hmm. and we would be willing to donate the proceeds to the organization.
Okay, so you know what, we'll talk more behind the scenes right. So we will do that because our, you know, and again, like I said, because I want to, you know, me and you, we can have a direct talk. We can, you know, we don't want like donations. I don't know if, and that may be my pride. I don't know. I just don't. I feel like we should be exchanging value. I feel like that's how I'm thinking. Right, but you know, that may be just my own hang up. I know other members are like, "Shut up, take the money."
At least until it gets on its feet.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so we can definitely revisit that. We'll talk behind the scenes, and I'll text you my information. All right, yep. So everyone, thank you for the call, and I will unmute everyone. And you guys can hang out if you want, or you guys can leave. I am stopping the recording.